they chased their answers, travelers through time and space, stopping anywhere long enough to learn, but briefly enough to escape involvement. The light in the distance grows brighter, even as the surroundings grow ever more bizarre. Questions grow darker, answers more involved, until reality itself becomes an academic concept, fit only to be dissected over a pleasant cup of tea.
Welcome to Pagan Chaos Magic. This is podcast episode 3. Wow, it's been like a roller coaster of a couple of weeks now. I've had some of the highest points I've had in a long time in the last few weeks, and some of the most stressed out lowest points I've had in a long time in the last few weeks. But that's cool. No one said life was easy. If it was, we'd get bored. I'm going to talk about the good stuff, though. And one of those really cool things that happened, I did a little work on my it's you can call it a website, but it's a blog. PaganChaosMagic.com. It's not really even a blog. It's just a blog overlay I'm using to keep my show notes in. I've thought about keeping a blog, sure. I've got a personal live journal page that I talk with friends with, but maybe I'll feel the urge to sit down in the future and put my words in down on the screen and do a written blog, but not today. I've got so much going on in my life that keeping my commitment to myself and to my son to keep this podcast going is a struggle in and of itself. You reap what you sow, and I got some really nice strokes this week, the last couple weeks, from my work on the podcast. It was the funniest thing. I was driving home. I've been doing work across the border in Windsor every day. It wasn't more than a couple of days after posting the last episode that I was on the freeway driving home, and I was actually thinking about the fact that I had just done this podcast about anger and road rage and learning to overcome that. I had a guy try to provoke me like I'd never seen. It was as if the universe was testing me and saying, "Oh yeah, big guy, you claim to be over this, do you? You went and told everybody on your podcast that you are capable of containing your rage. Well, how about we make up this minivan? Just ride 6 inches off of your bumper for about a mile. And then when you switch lanes, he's going to switch lanes with you and get within 6 inches of your bumper. You're going to switch lanes maybe 6 times in the next 3 to 4 miles. And this cat is going to hug you at 70 miles an hour like you're a lifeline." And I remember as I'm just trying to get away from whoever this nutball is, because I can't tell, because in my rearview mirror his windows are tinted, and not a lot of minivans that have tinted windows, but this one did. So I'm trying to keep my cool and reminding myself that I had just made this proclamation that I could handle these situations now without getting unreasonably angry. And here was this person just provoking me. And I just gritted my teeth and just dealt with the fact that this nut job was going to hang out 6 inches off of my bumper at 70 miles an hour, and there wasn't really much I could do about it until he found his exit. Driving is one of the sometimes an unconscious trigger for me. It's really easy for me to slightly trance while driving. And if there's emotion involved at the time, I have some odd effects kick in. A little bit of clairaudience sometimes, but overall I can get a mental picture of things that I shouldn't really be receiving through my five senses. And I made the decision. I was just like, look, I'm just going to grit my teeth and bear with this idiot. He hasn't made contact with my car. I'm just going to sit here and be calm, set my cruise control, and let him hang out of my bumper. I kind of tranced out a little bit then, and I kind of let myself drift just into the minivan behind me, just to get a feel for it. There were six of them in that minivan. Of that, I am absolutely sure. There were six bodies in that minivan. I have no idea why they were messing with me. But I did realize that if I had given in to my old habit, shall we say, of inviting them to pull off at the next exit and getting out to have a little shouting match, I'd have had my ass beat down. And the entire time I would have heard off in the distance the universe laughing at me like, oh yeah, you got that under control, do you, buddy? That's not really just a dramatic story. My neighborhood, let me describe my neighborhood to you. If you've seen the movie 8 Mile, they do a lot of shooting of that movie in actual locations. 8 Mile is a demarcation line between Detroit proper and the suburbs. I grew up 4.5 miles just north of 8 Mile. That's not as pleasant as it sounds. This is the kind of neighborhood where, if you've lived as long as I have, you've had at least one or two confrontations where weapons were involved. There have been 4 times in my life where I found myself in a situation, in a place and time, with a firearm on my person, because that's what needed to be there at the time. They don't mess around a lot in this neighborhood. If someone's actually looking to beat you down, you're going to get beat down if you give them the opportunity. So I get home from this minivan encounter. You know, that was a disturbing moment when the realization hit me that, look, there's 6 guys in that car, in that minivan. It is packed with dudes. They all feel a good 10 to 15 to 20 years younger than you. They're all male, and they're looking for a fight. And when I realized what I had almost stumbled into, I went home with a lot on my mind. I sat down, and I said, all right, I'm going to check my email. And I was looking through the email, well, nothing new, and went on over to Podcast Alley, and I had my very first vote and my very first comment for Pagan Chaos Magic. And it was from Mojo of the Wigglian Way. And, wow, that's... Mojo, man, I really needed that day. Thank you very much. Man, you took the time to give me a vote and to give me a comment. The comment you left was, welcome to the family. And, wow, I can't tell you how good that made me feel. It was a very, very good ending to that day. Since then, I've had another really nice comment and a couple of more votes on Podcast Alley, and I'm utterly stunned. I didn't expect that kind of reaction anytime. If it was going to come, I didn't expect it to happen as quickly as it did. And another day I came home, and I got an email from two really great podkin out there to steal somebody. I think it's Mojo's term, actually. From Arrowwind and Foxfire. They not only sent me their promo, which I had requested, they had gotten to it, they'd been working on it for a while, hashing out how they wanted to do it, but they also included a special little bump for me. And guys, man, that really, really made me feel, I don't know, man, there's many warm fuzzies. That's all I can say. I'm 6'3". I'm about 260 pounds, wide at the shoulders, long, curly, bushy hair and a beard, and I don't generally look like the kind of guy who talks about warm fuzzies. But you guys gave it to me. I mean, Crimson Sheep, that was like a way over the top nice comment you left for me at Podcast Alley. And as much as I appreciate your telling me that I'm your favorite podcast brother, really seriously, if I am, you need to look around. There's some much better podcasts out there besides me. If you want some examples, drop by paganchaosmagic.com and look on the right hand side. I got a new widget running that has got some of my favorite and really, really well crafted podcasts out there. There are some of my favorites. I listen to them when I can. I haven't gotten through every episode of every one of them. Some of them I'm savoring like fine wine, and one of them is the Wigglian Way. So, you know, getting that email from Mojo was amazing, and thanks you Crimson Sheep, and also thank you for the really nice email that I got from John. Thanks, man. Actually, you know, emails like yours, comments that I get that are positive, well, they keep me fueled. They keep me talking, and if you'd like to hear it, I'll keep going. So, had another great, great moment. My kid said Papa for the first time, I think it was this week. My wife told me about it. Apparently, my work schedule's been pretty brutal. I've been bouncing around between shifts. This project that we're working on it's got its issues. And it's demanding a lot out of me and my crew, the crew I work with. You know, these engineering feats in automotive plants are never a solo effort. It's all group. It's teams. You work with teams of skilled trades and teams of engineers to get it done and on time so that when they flip the switch, everything works together when they want to start running the line, especially right now. There's no more fat to cut. And we're all working our balls off, those of us who are still working. So I've been just freaking exhausted, but I dragged myself into the shower one morning. And if I get up late and my son's already up, he wants to come see me. As a matter of fact, my wife has a real struggle keeping him out of the bedroom in the morning because he wants to play. And that's great, except I do, you know, have to sleep for, tomorrow I'll need to be in at 3 p.m. with an hour commute. I'll need to sleep till at least noon. I had dragged myself out of bed and into the shower, and he realized that I was up. And he went tearing around the corner, but he stopped because he heard the shower going. And he stopped. He looked at my wife because she came around the corner because she hadn't realized I was up yet. So she was trying to head him off at the pass so he wouldn't wake me up if I was still asleep. But he stopped, looked at her, and started pointing to the door and saying, Papa, Papa, because the P is a little hard to pronounce when you're 15 months old. My lovely wife, Faye Kin, she is, and I call her Faye Kin because she is of the Fae. When I say that the fairies bother with me, I like, they put up with me. I kind of came with a package. I often feel to them as if I'm the brother-in-law that they don't mind so much, and they tolerate at family functions, because who they really want to see is my wife. I don't think I would be on their radar normally, half Irish or not. Fakin told me about him doing that, about him pointing at the door and saying Papa, and a couple more times he's done that. When I've gotten up in the morning, he's looked at my wife all surprised and said Papa. So now when I get home, if he's still awake, because, you know, if my shift ended early enough, when I push the button that sets the alarm on my car, it chirps, and he knows that sound. And he will say, "Papa," now, and run to the door. And my wife has to chase after him, because if he'll go right up to the door, like face up against the door, waiting for me to come to it. And I can't see him because it's a wooden door with a kind of a colored glass that you can't see through very well. So I try to open that door slowly. And even with all the crappy days at work that I've been having, there's really nothing like coming home to an excited face who most days is really happy to see me. He has his crappy days. Every baby has crappy days for various reasons, teething, whatever, but he's getting to that stage, Dragon Son is, where he's very demonstrative about wanting me around. And, wow. That's like... There is a hormonal shift when you become a dad. Don't let anybody fool you. There's a change. There's a shift. There are now new chemicals in the equation in your brain, and they will affect you in ways that you never expected. As a veteran of the psychic wars, from my younger days, I don't practice it anymore. I'm a father now with responsibilities, and going back to those days and playing with those chemicals would put me in danger of the state removing my child from me, and I'm not going there. But I had my days with them, and let me tell you, brothers and sisters, fatherhood, well, it makes LSD look like ginger beer. And I was a true fan of that particular molecule. And its close nephew, the mushroom, that's an ally of mine that I spent some serious time with. Helped me in many ways on my early steps. I don't recommend anybody take the route I took. When you unleash the ride that hallucinogens can put you on, it's a dangerous place. I've seen people crash down it. I've seen people lose their life because they couldn't deal with the revelations that were coming out. You know, I lost a brother or two that I tripped with in the past. But that's another story for another time. I've been gabbing my head off here for a while, and I haven't got to anything all that uplifting. Probably because I'm kind of a mood. After the break, I want to talk about something that one of my favorite podcasts, Pagan Heart in Maine, spoke about recently. Grey Wolf Moonsong, fine man. As far as I can tell from his podcast, I've never met him personally, but some people I intrinsically trust, and some I don't. And I can tell you that I've got nothing but trusting vibes from paying attention to the sound of this man's voice. He chose to remove a podcast episode from his feed. I'll talk about the reasons he did it, and I'm respectful of those reasons. And I have a few comments to make regarding the situation that caused him to make the decision to remove that particular episode with a particular interview on it from his feed. To give you a little preview of my frame of mind about this situation, I'm going to play for you a little Faith in the Muse, Chorus of the Furies. The energy of this song is where my frame of reference is right now in regards to the Reverend Dr. Kendra. Anyway, let's play the music. I'll talk more later.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Arrowind.
And I'm Fox.
And we're Pagan Parents on the Edge.
And you're listening to Kaya Dragon at Pagan Chaos Magic.
We love Pagan Chaos Magic.
That's the awesome little special bumper that Fox and Arrowind sent me. Thanks, guys. I mean, really, major warm fuzzies. And those are appreciated in February in Michigan. You know, speaking of things that I've gotten, I think it's time to throw a few other promos out there right now for people other than myself. Let's listen to some commercials for a few podcasts that really you should listen to. High quality stuff. I don't have all the promos for all the shows. I'd love to play for you there, or else, well, we could spend a whole show then with all the shows that I'd love to tell you about. But I do try to advertise what I think is just some of the finest pagan podcasting available. And let's let them tell it for themselves.
Do you have Celtic roots? Are your ancestors from Ireland or Scotland or Wales? From Cornwall, Brittany, the Isle of Man or Gaul? Do you love stories and tales? Ancient myths, legends, and folklore of the Celtic peoples. Do you want to hear more about King Arthur, Gwydion, Taliesin, Cuchulain, wild magic, and the realms of the Otherworld? Do you want to hear about the old gods, druids, and fairies in a way that they're not just dusty, dry words on a page? Then you need the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. In the days when the world was young, the days when the air was clean and the dew was fresh upon the grass.
Listen well, for I have tidings for you. Warriors are coming from across the sea.
Frank, take this message back with you. Tell the Firbolg they must give my people either battle or live in peace in half of Erin.
On my word, I should prefer to give you half of Erin than to face your weapons.
The Celtic Myth Pod Show will bring you the bravery of heroes and heroines, the magnificent pantheon of gods and goddesses, and the magic and wonder of druids, fairies, and folklore. Our ancestors would listen to these stories as told to them by their bards. They wouldn't read them in books. This podcast brings the magic of sound back into our legends. A new episode comes out twice a month and builds into a complete collection of tales from Celtic mythology. So just sit down, get comfortable, and join us every other week. Listen to news, chat, and a story from Celtic mythology with the Celtic Myth Pod Show from CelticMythPodShow.com. That's CelticMythPodShow.com.
This is Darkly Fae coming to you live from the Red Leather Couch in Southern Ontario. I'm your hostess at The Dark Side of Fae, a pagan podcast. I've always liked the idea that no matter how much we think we know, we're all just looking through the same glass darkly. Join me once a week as we explore modern pagan living together in the spirit of peering curiously into that glass. We'll talk about pagan spirituality and practice, events of interest to the modern pagan, and whatever else you ask me to cover. Please join me for an hour of music, laughter, and lighthearted exploration of the subjects that I come up with or that you suggest. You can find the show by pointing your browser to darklyfae.com, that's DarklyFey.com, or by subscribing in iTunes. I'm really looking forward to seeing you there.
And we're Pagan Parents on the Edge. Has your life been a little crazy lately?
Are you standing in line at the bank or the grocery store or DMV? Is your life really hectic lately?
Are the kids too loud? TV too loud? The world getting too loud?
Plug in your earbuds.
And make yourself your favorite beverage.
Join us for conversations about life as seen from the experiences of two pagan parents.
You can catch us on iTunes, you can catch us at Podbean, you can catch us at Podcast Pickle, and you can catch us on MySpace, where we have a player that you can get the Pagan Parents on the Edge episodes.
We'd love to have you as a listener.
And now, back to your regularly scheduled program.
Really love that show. I love all three of the shows, don't get me wrong. Can rave on about them forever, but, you know, this just give Foxfire and his lovely wife, Arrowind, a listen sometime if you get the chance. Especially if you happen to be a pagan parent. It's really nice and refreshing to hear their views on things. Like they mention in their podcast, the focus of their show is not on parenting. It's life from the perspective of two pagan parents. But they were getting a lot of email. How are you dealing with thus and so dealing with your kids? Because I'm interested, or perhaps maybe people who are having problems with their kids and really didn't know where to go with it were asking questions, and Foxfire and Arrowind really kind of put themselves on the line there, and they tried to answer as best as they could. And I just wanted to make a comment to kind of back up something Foxfire was saying that might be slightly controversial with some pagans, or, well, frankly, with some people, period, which is there can be proper use of corporal punishment in situations where it is the only resort. And he also related the fact that there was experiences in his childhood where corporal punishment was misused. And he put himself out there, and I felt him do it. And I wanted to tell you that, Foxfire, I have high respect for your ability to see past your own pain, because even though you saw in your childhood corporal punishment misused, it didn't blind you to the fact that sometimes, with some children, that is the only thing that they will respect. And I know, boy, that's going to really irritate a lot of people. But I'm going to back Foxfire up on this because I believe it strongly. Does that mean I go beating my kid? No. My son's 15 months old. He's a strong little kid. But it's a lot easier to simply restrain his arms if he gets into a time where he thinks he wants to hit somebody. And restraining his arms is so maddening to him. He can't stand being restrained. He tends to pretty quickly learn that if the behavior, which is hitting, produces an immobilization of his limbs, he stops hitting because he can't stand it when he's immobilized. Now, other kids, I'm not saying he never has gotten a smack on the butt, but it was more of a light smack to catch his attention than anything else. That there should be very few times that you have to resort to corporal punishment. Corporal punishment should be reserved for really serious matters. There are often very creative ways to discipline your child that don't involve corporal punishment, but it again depends upon the child. I am one of three brothers, and I am the oldest. And I can tell you that if you spoke with my mother, who's now raised three boys to manhood, she will tell you that different children respond differently to different forms of discipline. I responded really well to corporal punishment, but it didn't have to be used on me nearly as often as one of my other brothers, who wouldn't respond to anything else, which was very frustrating in many ways to my mom, but she was always very even-handed in her corporal punishment. So I just wanted to back you up, Fox. And I don't want to, not to cry a river about my background, but you put yourself out there, and I'm going to put myself out there too. I discuss my father, Dragon Son's grandfather, who passed long before he was born, frequently in this podcast. And there needs to be a little bit of a caveat to understand my relationship with my father was extremely formative in who I am. He was a man who had a remarkably short fuse at all the wrong moments. I can only describe it as if you've ever seen a person who drinks change personalities completely. When my father went into a rage, he was somebody else. He went from being a very rational, caring man with a lot of intelligence to somebody else. And I'm not talking schizophrenic sort of thing, or honestly, he tried for years to deal with his rage. But what was finally discovered later in life, when he was in his late 50s, was there was actual scar tissue buildup in the rage center of his brain. The area of his brain that controlled his rage impulses had what at first appeared to be a tumor, but turned out to be a mass of scar tissue. The sort of physical punishments, the sort of corporal extreme punishment that was practiced on my father in the old country in Germany when he was a boy, from his father, was far more extreme than anything that ever was administered to me. And some of the things that happened to me should never have happened. But that doesn't blind me to the usefulness of the technique. Not beating your kids, but on occasion corporal punishment. Sometimes, especially with boys, they will demand you show them the limits. And sometimes the limits that they demand are physical. I'll give you an example. Years ago, when I was involved with a woman, long before I met the lovely Faye Kin, who is now my wife, we were babysitting across a weekend for her sister, and we were watching my lady's two nephews. I think they were 8 and 5, somewhere in that neighborhood. Might have been a little bit, the oldest might have been a little younger than 8. But he had a real problem with hitting, and his parents were absolutely no corporal punishment type. I don't think they even believed in yelling at the child. Well, I hadn't been there 2 hours with my companion when the boy came over for whatever reason, just decided to sock me one. He, and I had been warned about this, that he did it a lot. And I grabbed him by the shoulder and said, "I don't like to be hit. Don't do that again." To which he prompted me, socked me again. And I again grabbed his shoulders and restrained him and said, "I told you, I do not like to be hit. Stop that." And then I released him. To which point he promptly socked me again. Now, this is not my child. However, I have to spend the next 48 hours with this child being one of the authority figures to be listened to. So I calmly took my fist and raised one small knuckle off of my index finger and very lightly tapped him on the shoulder. Not enough to even leave a red mark, just where I knew the bone was sticking out. I caught his attention. I caught his attention and his jaw hung open as he stared at me, because no one in this child's life had ever responded in a way like that. And I said, "You didn't like that when I did that to you, did you?" And he shook his head no. I said, "It didn't feel very good, did it?" And he shook his head no, still totally shocked look on his face. And I said, "Now you're hitting me much harder than I hit you. If you don't like to be hit, do you think I like to be hit?" And he shook his head no. And I said, "So, let's not hit each other anymore." And that boy was absolutely good as gold the rest of the weekend. He followed me around, wanted to talk to me all the time, wanted to play all the time. He was waiting for someone to stand up to him and be dominant. There is an evolutionary need within man that is very mammalian, that a authority figure, when you're a young cub, needs to occasionally give you a swat to the ear. Now, that's a very effective technique from the old country if you don't want to spank your child, but you're desperate for some method to keep them from doing something that might be harming them. You know what an old method from the old country is? To grab the child by the earlobe. And I don't mean grab and try to pull the kid's ear off, but simply between your thumb and your forefinger, grab the child's earlobe. It will immobilize them in a heartbeat, because if they try to run away from you, it hurts. But you can't damage their earlobe, as long as you're not squeezing ridiculously hard. It will simply stop the child from running away. And I will use that technique myself if someday I have to stop my child, say, from running onto a train tracks, and I can't reach his arm. I'll grab him by the ear. If that stops him from throwing himself in front of a train, which I don't know if you can hear in the background, but it's 4:40 in the morning here, and it's our local train due about 12 blocks away. You can just hear in the background the horn blowing. Not sure if it's coming through to hear you, but I can hear it coming through. Now, at the same time, I've also seen the opposite reaction, the bad things that happen when you don't apply a little corporal punishment. One of the reactions one of my uncles in Germany had to the kind of abuse he saw dealt out to him and my father and his other brothers from their father was he went the extreme opposite route, that he would not strike his child, he would not shout at his child, very low-key, tried to be reasonable and talk to the child. And that was the way. That was the discipline. And that worked fairly well for his daughter. His daughter was not the kind of child who needed much physical discipline, it appeared, because she turned out quite well. She had the sort of personality that apparently responded well to her parents talking to her about consequences in life without having to resort to a pained response to kick in the Pavlovian effect of guiding a child away from something that's really going to do them some damage. Now, unfortunately, his son did not respond well to it. It is common to live with your parents in Europe. But even when times were good in the economy, he really never, despite graduating at the top of one of the most respected culinary academies in Europe, really ran with it. He had the opportunity to go to school for any type of education that he wanted. Beyond that, if he wanted to go on a different route, he didn't want to take it. And, it's been years since we've had contact, but he was in his 30s and still living in his parents' house with a woman he wasn't married to and a couple of kids. Now, I've got no objection to living with a woman you're not married to, and if you have a couple of kids together, I have more respect for you that you're keeping yourself involved in those child's lives. But my cousin, and we'll call him R, never went far because no one ever drew any lines for him. Life was easy, and he ran with it. Because some of us have experienced physical abuse, it's easier for us to draw the line between what is acceptable punishment and what is not acceptable punishment, what crosses in the line into an abuse situation. Now, that gets really sticky, though, if you have to end up dealing with the authorities, and I understand, again, when Fox had said he has seen children taken away from families on the mere whiff or hint of abuse, yeah, I've seen the same thing, and it scares the heck, hell, whatever particular plane of torment you want to mention out of you when you're a parent and you think of the fact that somebody out there in a social services agency might think that you're abusing your child because you spank them and take them away and put them in the foster care system. Oh my goodness, I couldn't imagine a worse place for my son than the foster care system in the United States of America. We underfund our social network so badly that the damage that is done to kids that are in the foster care system is often pretty brutal. Not to say that there aren't wonderful foster families out there that take on children that, you know, they're not making any money off that. Sure, there's a check that comes from the state to help offset the cost of living, but it's never enough. You know, these are families that most of the time are reaching into their own pocket and treating these kids as best as they can. But these kids get bounced around through the system, and the mere thought of that happening to my kid, you know, that scares me. But that doesn't mean that if I have to, I won't use a little corporal punishment to keep the child from hurting himself. My son is a very insistent little man. When he wants something, if you tell him no, he will sometimes let it go. But if he is determined to do it, he will go in any way, shape, or form that he can manage to get around you if you're trying to stop him from doing what he wants to do. Now, this is a complete hypothetical. I don't presently worry about this because we have arranged our house to be as baby safe as possible, and we have covered over the outlets with very big heavy objects in the way, or other ways of keeping the electrical outlets in our home safe for kids. However, I remember me as a child being absolutely fascinated with the electrical outlets, and on more than one occasion sticking a fork or a butter knife into them to receive a really bad electrical shock. And apparently I was young and dumb enough to do it more than once, and I was spanked for it. And I'm glad I was spanked for it, because 120 volts AC coming out of a wall socket could have killed me. And if I had kept up the behavior, I might not be sitting here today. Did I have permanent psychological damage from the spanking? No! Really. The sort of damage that came from corporal punishment in my life was the times where my father let his rage demons, well, not let his rage demons, when the rage demons bridged that short circuit in his brain. When that happened, there's a bright, shiny line there, because then he disciplined in anger, and disciplining in anger is the key. Never discipline in anger. You are the adult. You take the time out to get calm, because if you discipline in anger, too much is happening in your body to make a proper judgment call on the level of intensity that you need to administer to catch your child's attention. Okay? Emotion can be as powerful a lesson teacher to a child as a swat on the ass. The swat on the ass achieves an emotive pain response. It imprints what you're telling them on their memory. Now, if you can make an emotive impression on that child in a manner other than hitting them, please do so. Hitting is last resort. And I mean, when I say hitting, I mean properly applying force to a child's buttocks. I'm not talking about knocking them across the room. Please, don't anybody misinterpret this. But we have become a society that is terrified of smacking our child on the ass on the occasions that they need it, or grabbing them by the ear and dragging them in the house on the occasions they need it. Now, thankfully, I haven't faced too many occasions where I have to even think about that, and that's good. But I will, sooner or later. My child is only 15 months. I'm in for a long ride of many surprises, and some of them might require corporal punishment. And I won't ignore it if it happens. Now, I've gone on way too long on this subject, but I felt strongly about it. And I know others feel strongly in the opposite direction. And that is your right, that is your opinion, and I'm glad you got it, and I'm perfectly happy to debate it with you if you want to write me at kiadragon@gmail.com. That's kiadragon@gmail.com. Now, I have a great time with my son. He often will listen to a no. He's very quickly getting past this stage of hitting because of the restraint that we've learned to practice with him. So, right there was an example of where corporal punishment was avoided, and yet the child still was educated. So, that's always the best way to go. Be as creative as you can, but you know, when you're tired and you're a parent and you're exhausted, the child's taking up so much of your time and energy because you can't take your eyes off him for 20 seconds. It's easy. It's very, very easy to be so frazzled that you start using corporal punishment as a first or second resort instead of as a last. And please, let me impress that I only believe it should be a last resort if at all possible. And I think that anybody listening to this with any degree of reason would agree with me. If you're going to use it, it shouldn't be the first tool you reach for. Or your child will grow up learning that consequence always equals pain. And that's really, is that the sort of thing that you want your child to learn? I don't think so. Okay, I'm going to quit gabbing on like I'm the world's greatest parent. These are just my opinions. As my child grows and I learn, I may change my opinions. And I'll tell you if I do. Go play some music. Bring a brighter, cheery note to the whole thing. I know I mentioned earlier that I was really upset about the whole Dr. Kendra fiasco. I wasn't actually that upset about that. It was an excuse to avoid something that has been on my mind for a couple of weeks now. And I want to talk about that on the other side of the music, but let's play something from the Tree of Shadows Pause album. It's called Dream Number 7. Love this tune, love them all, or I wouldn't play them. Anyway, Dream Number 7 from Tree of Shadows. brothers and sisters. Good to be with you. I've been recording this. I don't know if you can notice the tonal shift between periods in this particular episode, but this whole episode's being recorded over a period of now 7 days. When I said earlier in the podcast that my life has been a roller coaster recently, I wasn't kidding. What I've been experiencing over the last few weeks is as if I've been ringing like a bell. Those of you who have spent some time working magic might understand what I say when I'm saying that sometimes when you really pull a spell off well, very well accomplished, and you bend reality towards the directions that are aligned with your will. Sometimes if you really hit the nail on the head, there is what I once heard referred to as the slingshot effect. Discussed it back a while ago on some forums when chaosmagic.com was out there, and I asked the question because I had at the time, years ago, worked a powerful working, and for weeks afterward had cascading emotions that I couldn't identify where they were coming from. I would be going through a spectrum of emotion I was unused to at the drop of a hat. That sort of experience I learned to identify as the after effects. It's like the echo in reality from the change. When you bend reality, it makes noise. And it makes noise sometimes, at least with me, and my emotional centers. I allowed myself to, over the last week, get a little worked up about some silliness involving Dr. Kendra. And I did mention this earlier. If Grey Wolf Moonsong decided to pull an episode from his feed which dealt with Dr. Kendra and the First Church of Wicca. I understand now why he pulled it down. I have high respect for Grey Wolf, and I'm not going to go do a post-mortem of his interview. Earlier in this week, when I was angry about the situation, because I was kind of frustrated with that she had, it seemed to me, abandoned her flock. And that niggling thing was fueling my anger, and the funny thing was inside myself I knew that my anger was out of proportion to what had happened. Yes, what she had done was questionable at best, and it sounded an awful lot like she was abandoning her congregation, but that's not my call to make. And frankly, I don't spend a lot of time getting worked up over what other people do in the pagan community or not. Unless you are directly involved in my daily life, or you have a large role to play in me and my family's life, don't really care about your opinion very often, unless you want to discuss it intelligently with me. Then it's cool, and we'll debate. But that's not really where Dr. Kendra went. And frankly, I'm not even going to talk about her, because in the midst of getting upset about this silly situation, that frankly, if you want to find out more about, go to apaganheartandmaine.com or search for A Pagan Heart and Maine on iTunes and listen to the latest small special episode that Grey Wolf released. He reads the letter that she released to her congregation, and frankly does a far better job with calmly and with great wisdom refuting what appears to be a really first-class job of evangelical brainwashing. I think our sister spent too much time working so hard trying to get on an interfaith council to integrate her Wiccan church into the interfaith community, that when it just wasn't ever going to happen, she still wanted to be there, and that's where she went. But it doesn't matter. I knew I was getting angry for a silly thing. Now, the most important thing I ever heard the Greeks say was know thyself. And I had to spend a few days just sitting down and wondering, why am I angry? What is fueling this? I shouldn't be this angry about this. Actually, there's about 45 minutes of some really biting commentary about that whole situation that I recorded a couple of days ago that I've thrown away because it's ridiculous to even try. Grey Wolf summed it up. If you want to hear a wise man refute the silliness that Dr. Kendra's path is become, go listen to his feed. What this breaks down to was I was avoiding something. I was looking for excuses to avoid something that had happened. And that's what I'm going to talk about. I agree wholeheartedly with members of the pagan community who are hesitant to broadcast too much about their experiences if they have them with deity. There are some things that are perfectly good to tell people and some things that you wait until they're ready to hear them. Now, that was a view that I was very against for a long time in my life because I still feel very strongly that in total and utter free flow of information, I believe that you should have access to any piece of information that you want. Not necessarily resources to do anything with that information, but you should have the ability. And we're approaching that point with the internet. If we manage to keep the world governments from restricting it. But I believe everybody should have the right to complete and total truth in information. What are the facts? No matter what the morality of the situation, what are the facts of the situation? So where I'm going with this is, I was sitting down a couple of weeks ago and doing research for an episode on Eris. Now, the fact that I had to do research on an episode about Eris when I claimed Eris as a patron is odd. So I'll have to explain a little bit about it. And I'm not going to go into great detail about my experiences. There are some things that take place if you feel you've been actually tapped on the shoulder by something greater than yourself that is personal and you keep to yourself. But I'm going to describe the experience to you so that you understand why I can't just call myself a chaos magician anymore. Well, I can, and I still do. But I've always taken pride in the fact that I wasn't in any rush to embrace any gods once I abandoned Christianity. Once I, as Darkly Faye would put it in her show, fired my god. I love that term. She used it in her last podcast about experiencing deity. And she mentions that, yes, some people do may reach the point in their life where they have to fire whatever god they're worshiping because that god is not, or goddess, is not meeting the needs of the person. So when I fired Yahweh, Jehovah, whatever you wish to call him, I was in no rush to prostrate myself before any others. A couple of years ago, a message came to me from someone that I just intrinsically knew was Eris. I hadn't really done much research on Eris. Eris to me represented a goddess of chaos and discord. But chaos is, in many ways, a very beautiful thing, and it is as necessary as order is in the universe for there to be life. Life consists of an interaction between a chaotic system and an orderly system. There are rules for life. How cells grow, how they divide, how they pass along their genetic information. These are all rules that are laid down that are orderly rules, but these rules would never be animated unless chaos was also present, unless the random element existed. Now, that concept that's a podcast in and of itself. It's another podcast that I am working on, which will deal with quantum physics, string theory, some of the modern physics that we keep hearing about that people say support magic. And in my belief, it does. A lot of the new stuff coming out is just really blowing away the old physics majors. They're sitting back going, wow. Because so much of it, sounds like what the mystics have been saying for tens of thousands of years. And when our great religion of our planet, which is science, starts to look back in time and see a reflection of itself and what it can prove by empirical evidence, well, that's a very interesting situation. And as I said, it will deserve its own podcast. But even now, my subconscious sensor is fighting to keep me away from what I've been trying to express doing this research on Eris. And I'm going to recommend an excellent resource on the Greek gods and goddesses of any description. It is www.theoi.com. That's T-H-E as in the, then O-I.com. I'm not going to try to pronounce that because I'm not that classically educated. But it is a great resource for Greek mythology. It had the most meat I could search out of Google on Eris. Now, if you start reading about Eris on this webpage, a rage began to build within me, because this was not the goddess that was being described, was not who had spoken to me those years before. Now, I had kind of ignored, in some ways, that communication. I took Eris as a patron in my mind and my heart, but there was no worshiping of her. Difficult to explain, but felt more an agent on probation than a follower or worshiper of hers. It's the best I can describe it. I never met so polite a deity. Well, I've never ever met deity. So let's rephrase that. I never expected a deity to be so damn polite. She was pleasant. And what I was reading is that she's a hateful bitch. That's the way she is described by Homer and Hesiod. I don't know if that's a proper pronunciation. It's one of the lacking, you know, I didn't have the classical Greek university training, which would include a lot of mythology, and I would have had the opportunity to hear the professor pronounce this, but Hesiod, if you go on Wikipedia, is described as a Greek poet who lived around 700 BC or earlier. He was a contemporary, some say, of Homer. And Homer is our major source for most of what we know are Greek myths. Now, if you go through this, the first one-third of the section is just how Eris is this hateful, evil bitch who glories in the death and suffering of mankind and spends time on the battlefield reveling in slaughter long after her brother Ares and the other gods have left and had their fill. As she is described as the mother of every evil creature that was in the box that Pandora opened. She is described as the causer of every form of strife that you can imagine. And I started to have an incredibly strong, visceral reaction. I started to get furious. I started to... I can only describe it as the feeling I had the one time in my life that my father struck my mother. And I was there. I was, I don't know, 10. I it's not a memory I dwell on. But it's what I've had to summon forth to compare it against, to give myself some sort of a contrast to what I started to feel. I wasn't just angry. I felt like somebody had smacked my mother. And when that had happened when I was a little boy, I hurled myself at my father. All the little boy claws and teeth came out. And I jumped between them and I nailed him as hard as I could with my fists. And I said, "Don't you hit my mom." And the feeling was just like that feeling. This intrinsic, instinctive desire to stand up and say, "Wait a minute, who the fuck are you and who are you to talk about that about my goddess?" And that's where I stopped. I had never called her my goddess. I have never called any deity my goddess. And it was a very revelatory moment. And you can tell in my voice right now that I am still ringing like a bell. I got up and I walked around for a while and I calmed myself down. I'm like, "Look, calm down. This is not the being that you know." And for a second there I started, you know, as a solitaire, you got to check yourself all the time. It's important. If you're not checking yourself as a solitaire, it's very easy to fall prey to anything from obsession to megalomania. And I like to joke that I'm a megalomaniac, but I'm really not, because a megalomaniac will shed blood to gain power, and that's not something I'm ever going to do. No plans for it. I don't say never to the universe. It tends to prove me wrong, so I have absolutely no plans to ever try to take over the world. But as a solitaire, you learn to put in these checks, and I started to say, well, maybe the being that I had met was Andaris. Maybe I'm misunderstanding that. And no, I just didn't believe it. I don't know why I didn't believe it. I just wouldn't believe it. That wasn't it. I knew I had spoken with Eris. And I knew that what was being presented to me was not the person that I had dealt with. So I said, "All right, look, I've got to sit down and finish reading these, no matter how painful they are." And I got about 2/3 of the way down the page, and I found something that suddenly rang a bell. And it's a quote from Hesiod, Works and Days 11, translation by Evelyn White, Greek epic of the 7th or 8th century BC, before our common era. And I'm going to read you the passage, and it says, "It was never true that there was only one Eris. There have always been two on earth. There is one you could like when you understand her. The other is hateful. The two Erites have separate natures. There is one Eris who builds up evil war and slaughter. She is harsh. No man loves her. But under compulsion and by will of the immortals, men promote this rough Eris, otherwise known as Strife. But the other one was born the elder daughter of Black Nyx, the son of Kronos, who sits on high and dwells in the bright air, set in her roots of the earth and among men. She is far kinder. She pushes the shiftless man to work for all his laziness. A man looks at his neighbor who is rich, then he too wants to work, for the rich man presses on with his plowing and planting and ordering of his estate. So the neighbor envies the neighbor who presses on towards wealth. Such Eris is a good friend to mortals." That's my heiress. That's my goddess. That I know now. Now, I'll do an episode on Eris because I obviously have a lot more to dig out from the histories. You know, my impressions of her as my goddess are my impressions. Since I promised to do a segment on Eris, I'm going to give you a wider view than mine. Mine is my opinion, but I will supply historical, as best as historical information as I can, as getting as close to the meat of the facts as possible. But like I said, since that experience, I've been ringing like a bell, and that's all right. I mean, I sat down with a friend I trust and had a little spiritual counsel and said, brother, you know, I need a little bit of a check. I need to describe to you what happened and keep it in confidence. And I went into a little bit more detail than I might hear on this podcast. But that's an important thing because some things are very personal, not just to be strewn out to the world until maybe I know you and decide whether or not the information is useful to you. But I'm going to need a few days to integrate all this. Like I said, I'm working on a couple of larger segments that I want to definitely bring out very, very soon. Like I said, I want to get into quantum mechanics and string theory for those who don't hold doctorates and how it relates to magic. That was my cat, if you heard that. She wasn't too happy about me moving her off of me, but... And there are other episodes I want to do about a variety of topics. Give me a little time. I am going to keep trying to keep these episodes out every 2 to 3 weeks. Each one has been unique so far. A unique experience from everything from recording to editing. The first episode was a stream of consciousness that I spoke and laid down in 3 hours, but took 3 weeks to edit. The second one, the special one, happened in the space of a night. This one, the recording has taken place across the space of just about a week, and the editing has been easier than the recording. So, I'm hoping that you're still interested, and that you're going to stick around and listen to the next podcast episode. I'm going to leave you with S.J. Tucker, because I want to keep mentioning S.J. Tucker, because she's not only one of my favorite artists, but as I mentioned before, she could use our help. Go to skinnywhitechick.com if you want to check in and find out more information about how you can help. She's had very large medical bills. She is an artist. She lives in the U.S., so that right there is a formula for trouble. I don't know if the sale is still going on, but last I checked, all of her albums were selling at the wholesale price of $10 a copy to raise cash in a hurry to help her out. I took advantage of that, went ahead and purchased one copy of everything, and that means I've got a lot of really great S.J. Tucker music. And since I have a perfectly good reason to keep mentioning her, which is that she could use our help. You know, maybe you don't want to buy an album. Maybe you would just like to contribute directly just a couple of bucks or maybe more than a couple of dollars through PayPal. That's all available, and all the information is at skinnywhitechick.com. Please go there and check it out. She's a gem that we should care for. And I'm going to play something good by S.J. Let me see here. What shall we play? Let's go with something a little odd by S.J. so it can go along with the mood that I'm in right now. This is one of her most interesting tunes called Alligator in the House. And if I ever have the opportunity to meet Miss Tucker, or Suge, as she's known by so many of her fans, I really want to ask her about what the hell is this song about? Anyway, S.J. Tucker, Alligator in the House, off the Sirens album, number 9.
There's an alligator in the house. A toothy grin appears beneath my chair. A scaly tail goes sliding out of sight. Now it's gone. Was it ever there? Something odd has moved into the house. Reptilian tracks lead underneath the bed. And all the cats are tasty, fat, and scared. Though I doubt we've lost any yet. So what's the big deal? Doesn't everyone have an alligator somewhere, somehow? And maybe this one has always been here, but I never noticed it till now. There's an alligator in the house. Just caught her napping in the living room. She was dozing on the velvet couch, and the cats were sleeping there too. There's an alligator in the house. No one seems to mind except for me. Well, at least she doesn't eat the cats. I suspect she'd rather eat me. There's an alligator in the pit. She is dancing wildly with the snakes. She will do whatever it takes. They think I don't see their little smiles as they plan reptilian overthrow. But I hear them talking in my dreams. They will not be sad to see me go. So what's the big deal? Doesn't everyone have an alligator somewhere, somehow? And maybe this one has always been here. And hungrily she lies. There's an alligator in the house. Today she joined me for a spot of tea. She helped herself to raspberries and cream, and she didn't leave any for me. Well, I thought that I had seen it all, but this alligator proved me wrong. Like a lady as she drank her tea, she sang to me this little song. So